Hello, and welcome to episode 28 of The Spectrum. This was recorded on September 1st, 2025. Today's episode is part two of a three-part series. This is the life story of a transgender woman we're going to call Emma. She wanted to share her story, but also wanted to remain anonymous to protect her and her family. To protect her identity, we've digitally altered her voice and appearance, but the words and inflection and emotion you will experience are entirely hers. This part covers the period through her transition. In our conversation about this episode, Emma said that the medical standards of care that she experienced have evolved over time, so the requirements and labels that were used at the time are no longer always in use today. With that, let's turn it over to Emma.
It took time to find the right people, and I almost stopped before I got started because of the difficulty in finding help. I had read that a local hospital had a gender identity clinic, and I decided to look for them in the phone book. I couldn't find a listing, but I did see an entry for a GI clinic. In my single-mindedness, I thought, that has to be it. I called and made an appointment without even saying what for. I really had no idea what to expect. Something seemed off as soon as I walked in the door. When I was shown back to an examining room and I saw posters of digestive tracts on the walls, I realized what an idiot I had been. I was ready to bolt. When the doctor, a pleasant young man, came in and asked me what the problem was, I just said, "I'm in the wrong place." He patiently tried to get me to talk to him, and I became more and more agitated, wanting to be anywhere else. Eventually, he got me to tell him the reason I was in the wrong place was that I was looking for the gender identity clinic. He said something like, "Oh, you need to see the urologist." I was so desperate to be anywhere else that I took the appointment and ran. 2 weeks later, I was back in the same place and still feeling like I wasn't where I was supposed to be. The urologist came in. It was a young woman. I wasn't quite as panicky this time and told her I was pretty sure I was in the wrong spot and what I was looking for. She was very sympathetic and, more importantly, very helpful. She connected me with the right people. About a month later, I attended an introductory meeting. That got me a therapist. It wasn't long before I could laugh at what had happened, though at the time I wanted to hide under a rock. But I had managed to get where I needed to be, and I realized that I needed to be able to find humor where I could find it. If I couldn't laugh at myself, how was I going to survive difficult situations in the future? I went to my therapist. For the first time in my life, I spoke clearly about what I was feeling. At that first meeting, I looked like any guy that might have walked in off the street. But even so, for the first time in my life, I felt like someone was starting to see who I really was. My therapist pointed me at a local support group run by a transgender woman. I wanted to go, but I was a little nervous. I didn't know what was going to be happening in my future. Maybe I'd find this wasn't the right path for me. What if someone recognized me and spread gossip? And then I realized the odds of that happening were essentially zero, and I went. I was wearing a jacket that came from a club I belonged to. It was a small club that had maybe 20 people in it. I didn't think anything of it. When I walked in the door, a woman saw the jacket and asked if I knew another club member. Inside, I cringed, figuring that now I was going to be outed. But I needn't have worried. Of course, she didn't out me. For the first time in my life, I saw real people dealing with the same thing I was, not the sensational nonsense that was shown on television. For the first time, I met people that showed me it was possible to be successful. I also saw people who were struggling and in real pain. I tried to learn what I could to help me succeed and what could help me avoid problems. When I talked to my therapist, I expressed my fears that I wouldn't be a good physical candidate. She kind of cocked her head to the side and gave me this appraising look and said she thought I'd be fine if that was the path I decided to pursue. I was ready to race ahead, but she wasn't going to refer me to an endocrinologist for hormones until she was sure that I was in a good place emotionally. It was disappointing to hear. I'd spent so long trying to avoid this path, and I was now ready to move forward, but I understood where she was coming from, and I forced myself to be patient. Now I had some decisions to make. If I was going to explore whether this was the right path for me, I was going to have to tell at least some people. I started with a friend from college. We lived in different cities now, but we had remained in touch. He was a gay man, and he seemed like the safest person to tell first. It was a hard conversation. We talked for hours. But in the end, he was my friend, and he was supportive. It gave me the courage to tell others. The next person was a local friend. He was part of the club I mentioned earlier, and he and his wife had become friends. I had been dropping hints that I might not be able to participate in the club in the not-too-distant future. I had been vague, but serious enough that he and his wife were worried that I was ill. I had no idea what to expect from the conversation, but he was accepting and even opened up to me about some of the challenges he faced in his own life. I began to have hope. He and his wife were incredibly supportive over the next few years, and they wouldn't let me hide from myself. They were a big part of helping me stay grounded. I next told my oldest sister. Her reaction was concern and love and fear for me. I told her I was going to be telling her mother soon, and I wanted Mom to have someone to talk to. Next, I had to tell my mother. My parents were divorced, so conversations with them were going to have to be separate. I knew my mom was going to be emotional, but I felt sure that in the end she would be there for me. But by this point, I'd had enough conversations with people in the support group to know that I was risking losing people in my life. That I was willing to take the chance of losing everyone in my life, and I knew people this had happened to, shows how serious an issue this was for me. This wasn't a whim, it felt like survival. The conversation with my mother was hard and emotional, and we both cried. She wondered what she had done to cause this. I tried to explain that she hadn't done anything, that nobody knew why this happened to some people, but that it wasn't her fault. I'm not sure she ever truly believed that, but in the end, she was there for me. It took me time to understand that she was grieving for the son that she felt like she was losing, even though for me it felt like she should be celebrating the daughter she never knew she had. I think that's one of the hardest things for people to understand. It took me time to understand her grief, and it took her time to understand my truth, especially since I had done such a good job of hiding it for so many years. I told my mother that I didn't know what was going to happen. I thought I was heading down a path that was going to lead to surgery, but I didn't know for sure. I needed to find out what was right for me, and that I was open to whatever that answer was. My only rule was that if it felt right, then it was okay, and if it didn't feel right, then it wasn't okay. I promised her and myself that I was going to be as honest with myself as I could possibly be, and that I was going to listen to those who cared about me and take their counsel seriously. I'm pretty sure I told my mother and sister that they could talk to other family members if they wanted to. I was probably trying to avoid having the same difficult conversation over and over. They, of course, didn't want to, but they were struggling with what I said enough that others could see it, and so it came out. The one person I didn't tell was my next oldest sister. She lived in another state and had become an evangelical Christian married to a preacher. I hadn't seen her in about 3 years. I knew she wouldn't be supportive, and so I never talked to her. I think our mother told her. We were never close. I never let anyone get close back then. And she's never been accepting. But truthfully, she has distanced herself from the entire family, not just me. She's only been back 4 times in the last 30 years, each time for a funeral. So I don't really feel singled out. Still, I never gave her a chance to be anything other than what I expected, so I can't be surprised about what happened. I began getting electrolysis to remove facial hair. This was a slow, painful, and expensive process. It probably tested my resolve more than anything. I started going once a week, but progress was slow, and eventually I started going 3 times a week. My eyes would sometimes tear from the pain. But I was finally starting to see progress. I tentatively started presenting myself to the world as the woman. To say that I was terrified would be, an incredible understatement. My first attempt was to go to a convenience store and buy a carton of milk. I didn't speak, but only smiled or nodded and shook my head. Nobody paid the slightest bit of attention to me. The married couple I mentioned earlier convinced me to go with them to one of the outlet stores that was a couple hours away to get some new clothes. I was nervous about presenting myself to them, but when I arrived, I was greeted with, "Wow, you look like a businesswoman." It really made me feel safe. We got to the outlets and we wandered around, each of us looking for what we wanted. We weren't together for most of it. At one point, I was browsing through a clothes rack when an older woman who was nearby turned to me, holding up some article of clothing. I don't remember what it was. She said, "My daughter's about your height. Do you think this would fit her?" Inside, I was thinking, "I'm not even sure what size I am. How would I know?" But I stammered out an, "I think so." I hope I was right. I wasn't confident about being around people at all yet, much less speaking with them. But her casual acceptance of me was a big boost. Maybe my therapist was right, and I would be okay. This was the start of my nights and weekends period. I presented myself to the world one way during the day and another way at night. What did this tell me? It felt amazing to have the world see me the way I saw myself. That was a major right feeling that told me that it was time to take the next step. I practiced speaking at home with a tape recorder. I would record myself reading books and then listen. My biggest fear about passing at this point was my voice. It was a problem area for so many transgender women. It was a slow process. At the time, there was nobody doing speech therapy for transgender people, or at least if there were, I didn't know about it. But eventually, I found a way to speak that worked and let me speak above a whisper and didn't strain my voice. The telephone was the biggest test. People didn't have any visual clues, and they only had your voice to go by. I would start conversations by introducing myself by name if I made the call, as a way to set expectations. But eventually, that was no longer necessary. That was a few years down the road, though. It was not a fast process. The next step was to start what was called life test at the time. To be a candidate for surgery, one had to live full-time in the role for at least a year. But to do that, I had to tell my employer. I knew there was a very real chance I would lose my job. That led me to talking to a former employer with whom I was still on good terms. I told him what was happening with me and said I soon might lose my job. And if I did, would he have any contract work for me? He said that if he had work and I needed it, then it was mine. Wasn't certain. Depended on whether he had the work available, but it gave me the safety net I needed to talk to my employer. I talked to my boss, and then his boss, and then the head of the HR department. And to my surprise, I wasn't fired. I'm not going to pretend it was completely smooth sailing either, but before I get to that, I need to talk about my father. I had delayed talking to him until I knew with more certainty what was going to happen. I talked to him once I had decided that life test was coming, and his first reaction was good, great even. He said that he didn't understand, but that I was his child, and that was all that mattered. That changed when I later told him when I was going to be starting the life test. At that point, he decided he couldn't handle it and that we shouldn't see each other. Well, really, he decided he didn't want to be around me. We only saw each other 4 times over the next 15 years, and he was on his deathbed the last time. I now realize I should have talked to him earlier. I expected him to take in all this information and process it and be okay with it in a matter of a couple of months. It wasn't fair to him. At the time, I thought I was sparing him the pain of having to worry about something that might not happen. Maybe I was just hiding from hard conversations. I know that if I had it to do over again, I would have told him earlier. We did have some reconciliation before he died, but it was probably his illness that made it possible. I'm not putting all the blame on him. I didn't give him a chance to come to terms with events before forcing him to confront them. That wasn't fair to him. I'm not excusing his actions, but I didn't help the situation either. Getting back to the job situation, my employer and I worked out what was going to happen. I decided I was going to take a week off between leaving and coming back, just to put some distance between the two events. I began talking to co-workers. I went out to lunch with a group of around 8 people. We were sitting around a large round table, and I told them about myself and what would be happening. I told them they could ask me whatever they wanted, and that the worst that would happen is that I would tell them I didn't want to answer that. Nobody crossed that line, though at that point in my life, I was being pretty open about everything. I didn't try to tell everyone. I mentioned that humor was helping me get through this. I decided to see how long it would take the rumor mill to pass the information around and have the information come back to me. It took a week, longer than I expected. Someone who worked in another department stopped by my cube and said he needed to talk to me. I gestured toward a chair, and he said, "Let's go to the conference room." When we got there, I asked him what it was he wanted to talk about. He started in by saying there was a rumor going around the company, and that he knew it couldn't be true, but that I needed to know about it. I asked him what the rumor was. He said the rumor was that I was getting a sex change. I asked him if that was it. His response was, "Isn't that enough?" I laughed and said I had just wondered how much of the story had made it through. I said I wasn't certain, but that it seemed likely. We talked for a while, and his response was so characteristic of the responses I got from people. They accepted what I was saying. They didn't really understand, but they weren't scared off either, and they didn't judge me. It made me realize that people cared about me a lot more than I thought they did. I reached the date where I left for a week. During that period, they had a company meeting about me. I wasn't allowed to attend. During that week off, I moved to a smaller, cheaper apartment. I was spending money at an alarming rate. None of what I was doing was covered by insurance. My therapist gave her approval for me to start on hormone therapy and referred me to an endocrinologist. My first day on the job, pretty much every person in the company found a reason to walk past my cube. People who were never seen in my part of the building somehow found themselves walking by that day. I continued to work there for 2 years after that and was met with acceptance, indifference, and I'm creeped out vibes, depending on who I was interacting with. I was each new employee's first day's gossip. I'm not going to pretend it was always perfectly smooth sailing. Our biggest issue was, unsurprisingly, the bathroom. They insisted I use the single-occupant handicapped restroom until I had surgery. But it was a very large building, and there was only one single-person restroom. Sometimes it wasn't convenient, and I used the nearest ladies' room. Someone complained. I was hauled into HR and told I had to sign a document saying I would only use the specified restroom. After surgery, I was free to use the ladies' room, but not until then. I refused to sign. I pointed out that anywhere else I went in the world, I used the ladies' room without issue. They didn't care. They told me I had to use the single-person restroom or I faced getting fired. Eventually, the problem went away because our group got moved into a remodeled area of the building where there were two single-person restrooms. I don't know that I was the reason our group was moved to this area, but it seems likely. Between that and friends counseling me not to fight a battle I wasn't going to win, we reached this uneasy truce. I didn't know when surgery would be, but it was becoming more and more clear that it was going to be coming. During this time, I had lots of conversations with people. There was a common theme that I was hit with all the time. Not sure this would be true today, but back then, in the late 1980s, when nobody knew anything about transgender people, there were even more misconceptions than there are today. The most common question I got was whether this is because I wanted to go to bed with men. My response was that it wasn't about sex, but if we had to talk about it in those terms, it wasn't about who I wanted to go to bed with. It was about who I wanted to go to bed as. I'd figure out the who with later. I added that last sentence because I was trying to be open to whatever felt right. I'd spoken with transgender women who were attracted to women, and some who were attracted to men, and sometimes they found that the attraction they felt changed after they transitioned. I'd only ever been attracted to women, but I was trying to be honest enough with myself to realize that my attraction to them might be tied up in my desire to be like them. Maybe once I wasn't facing that internal conflict anymore, I'd find myself open to new possibilities. There were lots of other questions. Most of them were really good questions that showed that people cared about me and what happened to me. I tried to meet that with honesty.
This concludes part two of Emma's story. We'll have part three in episode 29. Thanks to Emma for sharing her story. If you have a story about LGBT plus life you'd like to share, contact me at spectrumpodcasthost@gmail.com. Until next time, take care.